Sorry, I didn't see you.
A public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who want to keep everyone well connected with healthy bones.
Hey America, we are your pets, and this song's dedicated to those people who don't have health insurance yet.
Tin Roll, we say, we want you to be okay. Tin Roll, we say, take care people for goodness sake.
There's a plan for every budget, so don't accept defeat. Now you can get covered and still
buy me treats.
Tin Roll!
So listen to me, a talking pug, you see. If you get health insurance, preventive care is now free.
So sweet.
You take care of your pets. Now it's their turn to take care of you. Visit GetCoveredAmerica.org to learn about your health insurance options. That's GetCoveredAmerica.org.
And take care, people!
Brought to you by Get Covered America and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Pat Frisco, host of Spirits Rejoice. Here's to another 30 years of fine, non-commercial, creative broadcasting from WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to the new Impact, presented every month on the fourth Tuesday on WHFR Dearborn, making waves on 89.3 FM.
Have you ever said, and thought, I didn't know that? Or, that's a different point of view.
Every fourth Tuesday, 89.3 listeners will have the opportunity to learn about the many organizations and people who are doing things for Dearborn and the Tri-County communities in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb.
Impact is devoted entirely to the issues of interest to the 89.3 listeners.
Impact is part of WHFR's weekly talk show format, presented every Tuesday from 1 until 2 p.m., making waves from Henry Ford Community College radio station, broadcasting on 89.3 FM from Dearborn, Michigan.
Please tune in and you might find yourself saying,
The following program is pre-recorded. It does not reflect the views of Henry Ford College, WHFR radio station, staff, or members.
Hello, I'm Sean Scott. I'm a local elder law attorney here in Pinellas County. I wanted to talk with you about some of the issues that you face, the legal issues that you face as you age. Oftentimes, one of the biggest questions that I get asked is, what do I need an attorney for in the first place? And if I do need one, well, what's an elder law attorney? Never heard of that before. Is it the attorney who's older for some reason? Well, no, the answer to that is not that the attorney is older, but that the clients that that particular attorney serves are older. The whole aspect of, or the subset of elder law, deals with issues that are associated with the natural process of aging. You know, as you get older, you have different problems. I think many of you might say that you have different medical problems. What's a doctor called that serves the medical issues as you age? As a gerontologist, right? I'm effectively, as an elder law attorney, a legal gerontologist. I deal with the issues that you're going to run into as an aging person. Now, those different issues are broken down into three broad areas, and the three big areas of practice as an elder law attorney are some of the traditional things that you may have heard of before, such as estate planning. Estate planning is where your stuff goes and how it gets there when you die. What process is going to be employed in order to move your assets to your heirs when you die? Now, the other aspect of this is incapacity planning. You know, as you age, you may not be able to do your own thing any longer. You know, there's all kinds of different disease processes that you can run into. Those arteries in your brain start to get a little thinner. Well, a stroke may become a reality for you. When you were 20, those kinds of problems were much less of an issue. But as you age, they become more prevalent. And when they become more prevalent, it's even more important that you have competent advice in order to advise you as to what kind of solutions you can put in place in order to meet those particular problems. For example, some of the most important things that I do for my clients is put in place an incapacity plan like a durable power of attorney, a healthcare surrogate, a living trust, a living will, so as to address the issues that you're going to run into as you age as far as the incapacity side of things is concerned. Now, a third aspect of the aging process that you're going to run into is the need for care being provided from some sort of outside source. An outside source such as an assisted living facility or a nursing home. The costs associated with a nursing home or an assisted living facility can be way beyond the means of most of my clients. They would need to go and do something in order to preserve their assets, to protect those assets for themselves and their family, as opposed to funneling them all into the cost of care until eventually they don't have anything left. So this is what we call planning for long-term care or public benefits. Using public benefits such as Medicaid, VA, veterans benefits as well, you can take those public monies and use them to offset your finances in order to pay for the cost of care. You can do this by accessing the Medicaid program, for example. In order to do that, however, there's very strict and very particular nuanced rules that you may not be aware of in order to become eligible for benefits. There's a lot of myths out there surrounding this, a lot of misconceptions. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen a client come in to me and say, well, there's no way that I can qualify for those benefits. I have too much money. Or I gave something away to my kids and I'm going to be disqualified for 3 years or 5 years and I just can't, I'm going to have to spend everything I have. It's amazing to see the fact that so many people have such a negative opinion on the ability to solve this problem. What your elder law attorney will do for you is he will show you a solution to these problems. And not only will he show you the solutions to these problems, but he'll weave those solutions together to solve the incapacity issue, to solve the estate planning issue, and to solve the public benefit planning issue as well. Having each one of the various independent solutions work together to provide a solution to the overall processes of the legal issues that you run into as you age. There are many issues that you face as you age. I encourage you to go get more information on this subject by visiting your local library or going out on the internet. A good website to look at as a starting place is virtuallawoffice.com. That's virtuallawoffice.com. I encourage you to go out and get more information. Until next time, I'm Sean Scott.
Hi, this is Lynn from Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. And what a positive difference WHFR has made over these past 30 years. Happy birthday to us.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, Betty. Great to be here. My name is Katie Graham, and I work for a program called Neighborhood Legal Services Michigan. We used to be called Wayne County Neighborhood Legal Services. We've been around since the mid-1960s. I am the managing attorney and program director for our Elder Law and Advocacy Center, which we set up in the mid-1990s to address issues that are important to people who are getting older or who may be caring for someone who is older or maybe caring for someone who has a disability.
All right. Now, your particular organization serves which, I know you're in Metro, is it Wayne County or is it the Tri-County area?
We have several different programs, actually mm-hmm. 9 different programs within our program, mm-hmm. but we do elder abuse education in 3 counties,
all right.
Wayne County, Livingston, and Monroe counties.
Okay.
We do free legal assistance for people 60 years of age and older who live in Wayne County. You have to live in Wayne County. And we do caregiver education, training, and support in addition to the elder abuse and civil legal issues pretty much in all 3 counties, but the main focus is in Wayne County, and for the free services, you have to live in Wayne County.
All right. I know, Katie, when everybody talked to you, I'm finding out this, like you were saying, there's different programs and things. So first, we're going to kind of like first focus on elder law, and then we're going to get all the different tangents programs. And I know, don't feel that you have to, you know, stay within elder law, but kind of give people what elder law is. And so those who are not familiar with it, they can know how to get in touch with you and what that program is about.
Okay, sure. Well, elder law focuses on issues, as I said, that are more important to people as they're getting older, as we all do get older, and we realize our mortality.
Mm-hmm. All right.
We want to, we definitely should be considering doing what we call life planning or mm-hmm. estate planning. Planning for the possibility of incapacity, meaning if you were to become incapacitated mm-hmm. and no longer to make or communicate informed decisions, who could you put in charge ahead of time while you still have capacity so that they could handle your affairs in the event you become incapacitated?
All right. I'm sorry, don't keep continuing on.
Okay. And I like to tell people the time to do this planning is now, because this afternoon, if we slip on the ice and hit our head, it might be too late.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody should consider doing this planning immediately, but do it in an informed manner where you can have discussions, not just with attorneys, elder law attorneys, hopefully, but also with medical personnel, social workers, trusted friends or neighbors, maybe a spiritual advisor.
Okay. In your introduction, you've been with elder law how long now? But again?
I've been with elder law over 20 years.
20 years. All right. I guess what a lot of the people would want to know is, what is the distinction between elder law and just law, you know, for people in general?
Elder law focuses on life planning, estate planning. It's also very broad in terms of, if we're dealing with the older population, and we deal with anyone 60 and older in Wayne County, generally it's all civil law, and that is distinguished from criminal law.
Okay.
We do not charge people with crimes. That's everyone's seen Law and Order.
Right.
That's we the people, the prosecutors, bring those charges in the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. This is civil law, where you're in the district courts dealing with a whole bunch of different issues, like landlord-tenant evictions, consumer problems, people who are victims of scams, identity theft. That's all under the gamut of civil law.
All right.
And elder law, not only because as we age, we have the same legal issues we did when we were younger.
Right.
But also, as I said, we realize our mortality and we really want to do our planning. We do help a lot of people who've been diagnosed with terminal illnesses, and one of the foremost issues on their mind is taking care of their affairs, putting their affairs in order with legal documents, and we do a lot of that, wills, powers of attorney. We do not do trusts under our free program. However, we have a reduced rate legal services program that will review trusts for a fairly nominal fee, and we'll also do trusts if it's necessary.
Okay.
Our reduced rate legal services program is called Great Lakes Legal. They always refer people to free first. That's part of their mission, is to get people in touch with whatever free services are available out there.
Okay.
But if there's not a program that can assist people for free, they will do it at a reduced rate.
Okay. All right. Now, when you you said that is it Elder Law Services been around since 1960, or has it been the...
Our overall agency is now called Neighborhood Legal Services Michigan.
All right.
We started out as Wayne County Neighborhood Legal Services.
Okay, that's what I remember.
Okay, yeah, a lot of people have heard of that. We were that for several decades.
Okay.
Our agency started in the 1966. Hope I got the year right. But it is in the mid-1960s, and we have several different programs within that. We deal with teaching law in high school, disability law, AIDS law. We have a reduced rate program for things like bankruptcy and other issues like that. We also do a lot of housing. We have a program called Supportive Services for Veterans and Their Families.
All right.
So there's one specifically for veterans, helping them and their families if they are homeless or threatened with homelessness.
Right.
We also have general homelessness prevention programs and assistance, where we can help put people in apartments and get them in safe, habitable housing.
Okay. Now, I know that in my contacts with you, you are under the elder laws under the Detroit area on aging. Is that okay?
That is one of our major funders. Yes.
Okay. And the relationship now between, you know, I guess I'm kind of fishing here. Are they the ones who oversee your program? Or are they the funders for your program? How is that?
They're definitely a separate agency, but they give us funding to do education in the community on elder abuse, caregiver education, training and support, as well as free legal services. The same with the Senior Alliance. Detroit Area Agency on Aging covers, obviously, Detroit.
Okay.
And then I call it the G's and the H's. They also cover the Grosse Pointe, Hamtramck, Highland Park, and Harper Woods.
Okay.
That's basically Detroit and the east side of Wayne County, and then everything on the west side, south Wayne County and downriver, is an agency, an area agency on aging called the Senior Alliance.
Okay.
And they cover 34 communities.
All right. Okay.
Both of them fund us to do free legal assistance for people 60 and older in Wayne County, and both of them fund us to do elder abuse education and caregiver education. And fortunately or not, the way we're talking about it is kind of odd, but we feel it's fortunate that we do all of those services together, because we're educating people and very much preventing a lot of elder abuse from happening.
Right.
And unfortunately, oftentimes abuse is committed by a caregiver who
right.
may be a family member.
Right, right.
So we're doing the prevention, and we're also standing ready to assist with any civil legal services that can be provided mm-hmm. to help the people out of that situation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, elder abuse is always a crime.
Right, okay.
And as such, it should go through the criminal justice system mm-hmm. most of the time.
All right.
But there are certainly some civil mm-hmm. remedies that mm-hmm. we can provide, like revoking powers of attorney,
right.
trying to encourage the banks to return money that was stolen,
right.
helping people who've been the victim of identity theft,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of different legal services that can help people who've been victimized mm-hmm. by elder abuse, short of the criminal justice system.
Right. Now, when you're working with elders, are there some unique challenges, as you say, with someone who's younger? I'll let you respond to that, because something came up to my mind. But answer that. Is there what, you know, with people, and the way I'm telling you where I'm coming from, that is that as people get older, the memory is different. You know, they're maybe they did not, you know, keep track of their paperwork, that type of thing. And so those, you know, how do you meet some of those kind of challenges in working with those kind of situations?
You're exactly right. We see a lot of challenges with people who don't know what paperwork they've done, or mm-hmm. they've done none, or they want to have things put in place, but they don't have anybody they trust in their life
mm-hmm.
who will help them if something happens. We meet some of those challenges, and then obviously there's some challenges that our society does not meet, and it's very difficult to help people who have no money and they can't afford to put someone in charge
right.
to handle their affairs.
Right.
But obviously there are documents that people can do and put their wishes in writing
mm-hmm.
so that if they are unable to speak for themselves or after they pass away,
mm-hmm.
at least their wishes can be known because
mm-hmm.
they're in written, legally valid written documents.
Okay.
There's a lot of challenges with, somebody coined the phrase years ago, the unfriended elderly,
mm-hmm.
vulnerable people out there who just don't have anyone to turn to. And as you know, being a service coordinator, supports and services are critical
yes,
for our
yes,
older population.
Right.
And some people just don't have any available. We try and reach the most isolated and vulnerable people
mm-hmm.
with all of our services.
Mm-hmm.
We're constantly figuring out ways to target them and get information to them that, you know, they can get things set up that will be very helpful if something happens.
What are some of those things that you've done in order to try to target those kind of people?
Well, a lot of word of mouth,
mm-hmm.
a lot of advertising through things like Meals on Wheels,
mm-hmm.
congregate meals, as well as the home-delivered meals.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of your most isolated populations. So
all right.
we have reached out to them with information they can put in all of the meals and bring to those homes. And
mm-hmm.
Targeting caregivers is a big way to reach people who are isolated and vulnerable because obviously, the ones without the caregivers are even more isolated, but many with caregivers, the caregivers doing a full-time job, maybe raising a family, young
right,
children,
right,
trying
right.
to care for an aging relative, and just doesn't have time to reach out and find the resources that
okay.
will help them do their job.
Mm-hmm.
And so we target them in many various different ways.
Okay.
For example, we do conferences,
mm-hmm.
And we participate in conferences every year that we partner with other entities that will put together mailing lists
mm-hmm.
of what they deem to be the most vulnerable. Banding together and collaborating is a great, great way for us to target vulnerable. I just came from a meeting. We're planning a caregiving conference for May 16th
okay.
at Wayne County Community College.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be targeting isolated, frail,
mm-hmm.
as well as caregivers
okay.
to give them supports and resources. And there will be a legal presentation
mm-hmm.
with a panel of attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a presentation on mental health issues
okay.
and a whole bunch of other resources for okay. people so that they're armed with that. And when the time comes, they'll know where to go
okay.
rather than just be reaching out in the dark.
Now, I also hearing that there's collaboration with other agencies, other types of service providers, and who are they?
For the caregiver conference, it's Neighborhood Service Organization, Bridging
mm-hmm.
Communities in Southwest Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat Rencher, Patricia mm-hmm. Rencher, who formerly of the Institute on Gerontology at Wayne State University, mm-hmm. and also on the Michigan Commission on Services to the Aging.
Okay.
I'm so many names, I hope I'm getting them at least partly correct. But Pat Rencher is mm-hmm. well entrenched mm-hmm. in the aging community. Mm-hmm. We've worked with many different agencies. I work with the Hannon Foundation mm-hmm. okay. quite closely. I'm on their board.
Okay.
And they have a network of service providers
okay.
throughout the community.
Now, the Hannon organization, are they, I know they have residents. Are they just other services underneath them, or is it just residents? And I guess it's part of this collaboration kind of thing we're talking about.
The Hannon Foundation is an operating foundation that provides services through its building in downtown Detroit on Woodward near okay. Forest. They also supervise service coordinators in 27 different buildings
okay.
Throughout Michigan,
okay.
but many of them are in the metro Detroit area.
Okay.
So they are in touch with a whole lot of residents of senior subsidized housing, mm-hmm. which are some of our most needy population.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things they're focusing on right now is trying to be ahead of the curve on a new program called the My Healthy Choice Michigan, I believe
okay.
it's called.
Okay.
It's a program for people who are dually eligible. They're eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid.
All right.
And there will be a group of new healthcare providers who these people may connect with. They may switch and join one of these healthcare providers to provide their services.
Mm-hmm.
A large number of the people who are eligible for that program do live in senior subsidized housing, and
okay.
they need a lot of education.
Okay.
The service coordinators are coming up to speed on the issue, so mm-hmm. they can advise people in their buildings
okay.
how to choose,
all
if
right.
to choose, but
okay.
primarily how to safely choose mm-hmm. a healthcare provider without losing services.
Yes, I know, because there's so much going on with these different kinds of health things and the whole Obamacare. And it's not, what is the actual name of that medical program?
Affordable Care Act,
Thank
to
you.
My knowledge.
Yes, okay, all right. But I know, and a lot of people are, do you get a lot of questions from seniors as to, I guess it's My Healthy Choice, is that one of the alternatives to, or is that a part of that program, or is it different?
It came through as a result of the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
There are four pilot programs in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne County's began March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
There will be, and I'm not an expert on this by any means. I do know a lot of experts, but not, it doesn't come to me by osmosis.
Okay.
But my understanding is that it is a voluntary program, but people who don't choose to go in will mm-hmm. be automatically enrolled, I believe, July 1st.
Okay.
They can still choose to opt out of that program.
Okay.
One of the concerns may be that they would lose their primary care physician
mm-hmm.
if they change to a different healthcare organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think they're called Integrated Care Organizations, or ICOs.
Okay.
So people really need to do their homework in terms of what is their current health care provider,
mm-hmm.
the services provided, and compare it with something that they might choose to opt in.
Okay.
And there are other programs like the PACE program
mm-hmm.
that have been out there for years that mm-hmm. may be another option they'd want to explore.
Mm-hmm.
The service coordinators in these buildings, if anybody lives in senior subsidized housing and has a service coordinator,
mm-hmm.
are going to be probably the first line of defense for the people who live in those buildings.
Okay.
And they are coming up to speed on this issue
okay.
as we speak.
Okay. Now, with the, you've been involved in this for almost like 20 years. What are some of the changes that you have seen within legal matters or legal concerns for your particular group of people that you're working with over the 20-year period?
Well, there's been obviously a lot of laws that have mm-hmm. changed.
Mm-hmm.
There have been benefits added. There was
mm-hmm.
a long-standing effort to, and advocacy efforts to get the My Choice Waiver program going,
mm-hmm.
where services could be provided in the home
mm-hmm.
rather than people going prematurely or unnecessarily to a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful program. People
mm-hmm.
can contact the Area Agency on Aging, which houses what we call the Medicare Medicaid Assistance
mm-hmm.
Program.
Mm-hmm.
They can contact Their area agency on aging. There's one set up to cover every region of the country.
Okay, the Senior Alliance is the comparable for the southern.
Southern and Western Wayne County, including Downriver.
Okay,
yes, okay. Senior Alliance.
Okay, because our listeners cover both areas. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So I want to. Senior Alliance is the other one, the comparable to adult. No. Area on age. I'm getting a bit like you, like all these different acronyms.
Yes, I know. It's just too much to keep up on.
Okay, so you're about to change it over the period, over these last few years now.
The area agencies on aging provide many services themselves, but they also contract with agencies such as ourselves mm-hmm. to provide services in the community mm-hmm. for people who are 60 and older, and also for people who are caring for someone who may be 60 and older, mm-hmm. and for people with disabilities okay. under 60 and over 60.
Okay.
They're the ones to contact for a whole host of different resources in the community.
Mm-hmm.
One of the services that they house here, DAAA and TSA for the Senior Alliance,
mm-hmm.
Is the Medicare Medicaid Assistance Program. They also, they're the ones to contact for the My Choice Waiver
okay.
Program
right.
to help get services in the home. Another major change, well, I don't know if it was definitely a legal change, but it certainly was a change in terms of education and awareness,
mm-hmm.
is through the Veterans Administration.
All right.
There's a program called Aid and Attendance.
All right.
It's like attendance in school,
mm-hmm.
and aid, like you need assistance.
Right.
If somebody needs assistance in their home,
mm-hmm.
the VA will provide financial assistance,
okay.
which is much needed.
All right.
To people who are veterans, honorably mm-hmm. discharged veterans,
mm-hmm.
who's, and I'm not an expert again, I know okay. I keep saying that, but there's just too many issues to stay
right.
on top of everything
right.
specifically. But if you served during one of the past seven wars, you did not have to go overseas.
All right.
There's some very intricate rules, but aid and attendance will financially reimburse people who
mm-hmm.
have medical expenses.
All right.
And they're pretty liberal in mm-hmm. terms of what they will provide assistance for, financial
right.
assistance, but it can be anywhere from around $700 to $1,700 per month.
Okay.
Which helped a family member of mine stay out of a nursing home for quite some time.
All right. Okay.
You have to have receipts and things mm-hmm. like that. We tell people to go to their Veterans Service Organization, like
right.
the VFW or the right. American Legion,
right.
and see if somebody there can help them
all
to
right.
apply. But the key is to get that application in quickly, because as with a lot of bureaucracies,
mm-hmm.
which the VA is, it mm-hmm. can be time-consuming to
right.
get a reply. But if you have your application date, and you are approved down the road, which used to be a long time. I hear it's getting shorter, but it
okay.
could be 6 months to a year in some cases.
All right.
It will be retroactive, and
okay.
that can turn into a lot of cash.
Okay.
So people really need to get that application in quickly. If they don't have all the information to start with, just get the application in and secure that
mm-hmm.
application date.
Okay.
And then get the rest of the information that they're going to request from you.
Okay.
So those are two major programs that we like to really focus on maintaining independence.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people we talk to would rather stay in their own living arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
I have asked probably well over 100,000 people
mm-hmm.
how many people in this group would like to move into a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And I only had one hand raised.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was a younger guy. He was a Detroit cop.
And
I said, really, you want to live in a nursing home? He said, yeah, I hear there's more women there than men. So he didn't really
care. No, he didn't really want to go.
So we like to really give people resources in the community and give them legal planning
mm-hmm.
and any other urgent legal matters,
okay.
Helping address those. A lot of people don't even know that their issue is a legal matter. If they're turned down for benefits or things like that, that can turn into a legal appeal that we can definitely advise
that was,
people.
That was what I was going to ask you. Okay, so, and that's probably one of the major, I think, I heard you would, you know, as we've been talking, a lot of this is education and training and bringing people's awareness of, you know, just what their options are. If a person wanted, you know, a senior wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Our phone number is 313-937-8291.
Okay.
And we have a human being answering the phone, except for the not too rare, but It's sort of uncommon, but we have four lines that sometimes are all lit up at once.
Okay.
But other than that, they certainly can navigate the phone system. But I would say 90% of the time, a human being will answer the phone 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. We do intake from 9:30 till 12 noon, Monday through Friday. So that's the best time to call.
Okay.
If somebody has an urgent legal matter, if they have a court date coming up, or as I said, if somebody's terminally ill and they need to do their planning, oftentimes very quickly, we tell them to call us right away any time of the day.
Okay.
Any abuse situations, call us right away. Abuse needs to be treated, as I said, by the criminal justice system. Law enforcement needs to investigate it and take it to the prosecutor. Adult Protective Services, through our Department of Human Services in the state of Michigan, needs to investigate reports of abuse as well. But a lot of times we can also provide what we call the civil remedies to help people who have been the victim of abuse.
Okay. Now, I was at a conference back in August or something, and it was brought up that Adult Protective Services does not have an enforcement type of policy, and
what they might have been referring to is that when they discover that a crime has been committed, then they are supposed to contact law enforcement. And contacting law enforcement because they have enforcement powers to investigate. So that may be what they were alluding to.
Okay.
Adult Protective Services has certain powers as an agency of the state to investigate allegations of abuse, which it's always a crime, but sometimes it's not something that would easily be charged as a crime.
Okay.
And they may have some other avenues, like going through the court systems to get protective orders or things like that. So they do have some powers, but they certainly don't have the power to arrest people.
Okay.
They do work with law enforcement
to
investigate those crimes, and they do have arrest powers.
All right. You were, as we were talking, there were different types of levels of abuse, neglect, that type of thing. Does elder law get involved in helping a person to identify and clarify what their rights and things are with that, and how does that go about?
Absolutely. One major form of abuse is after somebody has had a document drafted called a power of attorney. And we strongly advise people, if it's safe to do so, to do a power of attorney, because that's a document where you give someone else the legal authority to handle your affairs for you, either for medical treatment purposes, which is, we do deal with that in a separate document called a healthcare power of attorney, or to handle their financial affairs, which is called a financial power of attorney. They're both called durable, which means they'll remain effective after a person becomes incapacitated.
All right.
Healthcare power of attorney is only effective when somebody becomes incapacitated.
Okay.
As long as somebody has the ability to speak for themselves and they have legal capacity to understand what they're doing and they want to do it, then they have the legal right to, and they can and should speak for themselves.
All right.
But if something happens, a stroke, an accident, something like that, then they, if they've done their proper legal planning ahead of time, and we do a lot of that through our office, we'll have someone who is legally in charge of being able to speak for them regarding medical treatment.
All right.
We think that's one of the most, if not the most important document anyone can do in their lifetime. Because they're giving someone the legal authority to communicate decisions for that person that could result in their death.
Okay. Do you also get involved with things that have to do when a person is, you know, the person getting ready to go into a nursing home? I know a couple of issues where a person needed the nursing home care, but they had to draw down their funds in order to be able to qualify. And they were kind of like using that as a buffer, so in case an emergency comes, it's like a catch-22. And does your department get involved in trying to help a person, you know, do things so they won't get, you know, because they won't be penalized if they try to do certain things and they didn't understand what their legal rights were to do that?
We definitely give them advice about how to plan for the possibility of needing a nursing home, how to plan to pay for that, which is one of the biggest issues, as you're pointing out.
Right.
Not only how to choose one that's the best nursing home I mean, it's going to be their home for a short period of time or maybe longer, how to safely choose the right nursing home, but also how to be able to afford that, or maybe if they can't afford it, how to apply for Medicaid,
right,
which is a primary payer of nursing homes in Michigan.
Right.
If it's extremely complicated, we don't do the free legal advice. Our reduced rate legal services program has Medicaid experts who give the complicated legal advice on these issues. We refer to the Medicare-Medicaid assistance program that I mentioned earlier for some general advice, but oftentimes a Medicaid planning attorney is critical to help save as many assets as possible.
Mm-hmm.
When it's a single individual, the single individual who's going into a nursing home has to be down to $2,000 in assets.
Mm-hmm.
But some of their assets, like their home and a car and some prepaid burial or funeral, those assets are excluded. They won't be counted when the Medicaid application is submitted and they make the determination whether someone is eligible or not.
Mm-hmm.
If they have over $2,000 in what we call liquid assets, cash, stocks, bonds, then they're not going to be eligible.
Okay.
So we like to advise them in advance or put them in touch with another entity who can give them either the more complicated or the easier advice how they can be eligible before they apply, because if they're not going to be eligible, they'll just be denied.
I'm going to come with checking on our time here, and we still got plenty of time. I was interested in these conferences that you were mentioning before, and you were saying how, you know, what they're two different, are they related to each other, or are they two separate conferences?
Two separate conferences. The one I mentioned earlier, the caregiving conference on May 16th at Wayne County Community College. The other one is, we have an organization for Oakland and Wayne counties called the Coordinated Community Response Coalition.
Okay.
And that is response to elder abuse.
Okay.
A lot of it is to bring awareness and prevention, which is the key and the ideal response to this situation is to prevent it from happening, but also we bring together many different agencies to discuss individual cases we may have seen in our offices, preventive efforts in the community, and we became aware of how some elder abuse issues were being addressed in Canada and decided, wouldn't it be nice, we'd never heard of it happening before, but wouldn't it be nice to bring our Canadian counterparts in and discuss how abuse is dealt with over there as compared to over here by law enforcement, by judges, by social workers, by adult protective services, by civil attorneys such as ourselves, and to share best practices, what's worked in each of our communities. So we're doing that June 26th.
All right.
At Madonna University, we have a fabulous keynote speaker. His name is Paul Greenwood. He, I believe, was one of the first, if not the first, elder abuse prosecutors in the United States.
All right.
He's from San Diego. Well, he's originally from Britain, but he has been a San Diego prosecutor for a number of years now. I think I first saw him well over 15 years ago.
All right.
And he's a very inspiring, very dedicated prosecutor who brings a lot of attention to this issue, and he invigorates people. He makes them see different ways that they can address this problem. He's very innovative. I don't know if you've ever heard, Betty, of the grandparent scam.
Yes.
Horrible scam that's been around for years. It keeps rearing its ugly head.
Okay.
Doesn't go away.
Just for our, you know, our listeners, kind of like go over what that grandparent scam is.
That is where these con artists, scammers, will target usually an older individual. Oftentimes, they will call them and pretend to be a grandchild. Oftentimes, they'll say, I'm in Canada, I'm in jail, or it could be any other country. I need you to wire me some money.
All right.
And they know how to push this person's buttons.
Okay.
They know how, well, for instance, I know of one victim who was in northern Michigan, and they called her and said that they were her grandson, and they may mumble the name. They're just experts in how to approach individuals and really target them.
Okay.
This individual was a perfect victim to target because she actually did have some land in Canada where she had a cottage. They called and said, it's your grandson, so-and-so. I'm in jail in Canada. you've got to wire me some money. Well, this woman in her early 90s could run circles around us, Betty, but she ran right down to the bank and wired money, never to be found again. Then she got back to her senior subsidized housing, so, you know, she didn't have a lot of money to begin with.
Right.
And there was another call, same people saying, we need more. Luckily, and I don't know how often this would happen in the bigger banks, but this was a small bank, small town.
Yes.
And they called a relative and said, I think something fishy's going on here. So the next wire transfer did not happen. However, once someone is a victim, it can be one of the worst things that happens to them. Paul Greenwood, again, this keynote speaker, at one of his presentations, he shows pictures of a victim 6 months later after the crime has come to light, and he's charging them, the perpetrator in the court system. His victim had lost 40 to 50 pounds, was actually...
Distress. Right.
And literally not wanting to live any longer because of the shame, embarrassment, humiliation, of thinking that, you know, they were too dumb and taken advantage of. These con artists con anybody.
And I think that's part of the issue, is that people who may have been very up and going, assertive, aggressive even, in their younger days, when they get older, it's like, well, I should have, and they just don't tell.
Yes, there's a lot of barriers to reporting.
Right.
So with the grandparent scam, of course, they're ashamed. They think they're going to lose their independence. Someone's going to throw them in a nursing home because they didn't know what they were doing.
Yes.
They're easy victims.
Right.
But I just want to dispel that. Any one of us could be a victim. These con artists sometimes have degrees in psychology. They learn how to do it very, very well.
Yes.
Well, Paul Greenwood, you know, I'm on an elder abuse listserv that has discussions of what happens in the abuse arena throughout the world.
Right.
He actually has taken on a grandparent scam case, and I haven't heard of anybody else taking this on, and he's already issued 10 warrants in a case that came to light in his San Diego area, where the mother or the grandmother was taken for over $60,000.
Oh my goodness.
But he's got 10 warrants out. He's doing this tough investigating. It's hard to find these con artists. They're professionals.
Right.
They know how to hide. They know how to stay under the radar. But he's just, you know, such a good example of a prosecutor who will way the extra mile. And we do have prosecutors. I'm not saying we don't have them here that go way the extra mile to catch the perpetrator.
Right. Is there a difference in the legal concerns for someone who's, like, you know, part of, say, like Detroit, as opposed to surrounding communities like Dearborn or things? But Dearborn is not small, but it's still, you know, there's a difference. Is there a different types of legal concerns or things that come up, you know, given the different types of, you know, community populations and things that you're aware?
In terms of need for civil legal assistance and need for elder abuse education and prevention, I would say Detroit has much higher needs because we have such a larger population of low-income and low-income minorities, people who are isolated, people who don't get the information to their door, not connected with supports and services. I think our area agencies on aging do a wonderful job, but it's a really tough nut to crack to reach all these people. And I think Detroit has much higher needs for legal services and education and awareness than some of the other communities. We deal with, you know, the 34 communities on the west and south Wayne County side, and then all of the Detroit Area Agency on Aging communities. Is just, you know, when people have more resources, more income and assets, they have more resources available to them.
I'm thinking, though, is that when a person gets to a certain age, they get a fixed income. So they may have paid off everything, but they have no extra monies to, you know, I say discretionary funds. I guess that would be a good way of putting it. And so their fixed income, they may have come from a more affluent or established, you know, things, but that fixed income almost makes them poverty, you know, or low income, that type of thing. And what are some of the legal kinds of things that go on? You know, what are the, Is that the same thing? You know, the isolations, is it the same, or is it different, or what? Rod, what's your impression on that?
Well, again, people who are on fixed incomes, yes, of course, they don't have a lot of extra income. They can't look forward to getting a raise next year. Mm, there's cost of living allowances, but nowhere near like when you're younger and you could get a part-time job to supplement and things like that. We definitely like to let people know about the benefits that are available to them. Some people are not becoming aware of supplemental security income, Medicaid in the community, as well as the nursing home, food stamps, those type of benefits for the very low income people. There are programs we refer to all the time that will do benefit enrollments and checkups to make sure people are getting everything they're entitled to get. The older population oftentimes, and I just had it said to me last week, I've had it said umpteen times over the years, that I don't like to take handouts. These aren't handouts. These are entitlements.
Right.
These are things to help keep people safe, to provide a network so that they don't starve to death or forego their prescription drugs to buy food.
Yes.
I'm sure you're well aware.
Yes.
So, there's a lot of issues when people are older and no longer out in the workforce and able to, you know, compete for better jobs and things like that and increase their income. There's a lot of limitations as a result of being on a fixed income.
You know, I've kind of like hopscotched around. Are there some areas or some types of programs and things that, you know, your organization does that we have not highlighted so far that you can, you know, that you can think of?
Well, I may have mentioned it, but I'd like to reinforce the fact that we do a lot of urgent legal cases in our office.
Okay.
We are handling a lot of issues where people are being sued because, just as I mentioned, they may have used their credit card to buy their prescription drugs and their food, and then they can't pay that credit card off. And then that credit card company will sue them. When they sue them, if they're successful, they will get what's called a court order, and they can take that court order to the person's bank. And when they do that, they will ask the bank to garnish the account. However, if the only money in their bank account, which a lot of the people we deal with have, Social Security is the only money in their bank account. It is illegal for the credit card company to garnish that Social Security. I know it's hard to believe, but some banks don't really watch out for their customers too well. And they just let that money be garnished out of the bank account. Then we're dealing with more legal problems in our office, because if they don't have their Social Security, they can't pay their rent. Then they're dealing with an eviction proceeding if they don't pay their rent. We like to get out in the community and educate people that, first of all, that Social Security cannot be garnished by the credit card company. The government can garnish a certain amount of Social Security. But we like to let them know that, and if they're facing a court order, a judgment against them in a court, to protect that money, to protect themselves, to tell their bank, it's illegal to take my Social Security, don't let anyone do that. That's just an example of types of situations that we can educate people ahead on. Certainly, after the fact, we can get that money back, but it's going to take a while to go through the courts and get it back because it was taken illegally in the first place. And by the time that happens, as I said, we're often dealing with preventing, hopefully, preventing an eviction or using one of our several programs at Neighborhood Legal Services Michigan to help house the people who are threatened with homelessness in those situations. And again, a lot of consumer issues, a lot of identity theft victims, a lot of abuse situations where family members have taken advantage of another family member. Very recently, I talked with a woman whose son had been given the credit card to make one purchase by his mother. Well, he went on to use it for time and time again without her permission. Very tough for a mother to call the police on her own son. In many situations, we try and encourage that to happen, but we also like to sit down and give them legal advice and preventive techniques to not have it happen anymore. Switch that credit card. Close that credit card out. Get a new one so they don't have access to it anymore. Things like that.
One of the presentations that you gave that I was a part of was the fact that when people have their children on their bank accounts?
Yes.
All right. And what's the legal ramifications and, you know, and implications of them doing that? And could you share with our listeners what that's about?
That's called putting someone else joint on your bank account or your house.
Okay.
As a joint owner. And mm-hmm. that is an absolute no-no.
Okay.
Do not do that. It is not safe at all. If you put someone on as an owner of your house, often done with a document called a quit claim deed,
mm-hmm.
or if you put someone on as an owner of your bank account, they are just that. They are an owner. What is to stop them from removing the funds from that bank account?
Mm-hmm.
A bank can't tell an owner of a bank account that they can't take their money out.
And I think that's what people don't recognize, is that the person is not, it's not just a joint signature, that's a joint ownership. That's
right.
That's what they're not understanding.
That we can address that situation where somebody wants to put someone as an owner on their bank account, usually for one of two reasons. One, they want them to be able to handle their affairs if something happens and they can't get to the bank to handle their own banking. They want that person to be able to handle their banking for them. The other reason a lot of people do this is because they want to avoid probate. They're being scared by various entities in the community that they need to avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
What they're talking about when they say avoid probate, they're talking about the probate court and avoiding the proceeding at the probate court after their death,
mm-hmm.
where their property is distributed to their legal heirs or it's distributed to the people they've named in their will.
Mm-hmm.
People think if you have a probate court proceeding that we call probating the estate,
mm-hmm.
that it's going to be years through the dragging through the courts and cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not necessarily so.
Mm-hmm.
Every situation is different. It could be a very simple proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, there may be safe ways to avoid probate and not jeopardize your home or your bank accounts by putting someone else on as an owner.
Mm-hmm.
We can address those ways. We can do special types of deeds
mm-hmm.
where someone can leave their house to a person after their death without it having to go through the probate process.
Mm-hmm.
So they are avoiding the probate process
okay.
and they are putting someone's name on there, but only as a beneficiary.
Okay.
Just like life insurance works.
All right.
So they're not a current owner.
All right.
If you make them a current owner, they're just that. They can move into that house. They can bring their boyfriend, his six kids, dog, parrot.
And another thing that came up during that discussion is that, let's say you become aware that that was not the best person to be a part of that, you can't just eliminate them.
Absolutely.
Okay.
If they're an owner, they are an owner. You can't just take their name off, just like no one can just take your name off your house. You have to take it off yourself. You have to agree to it. Another major pitfall of joint ownership is that that joint owner's creditors can come after whatever their name is on.
Right.
So if they have a creditor, sometimes through no fault of their own, an accident or something like that, a slip and fall on their property, somebody gets a judgment against them again,
mm-hmm.
they can take that judgment and go after the property that they own. And if their name is on your house or your bank account, that is considered to be property they own. Also, some people I talk to say, well, we have perfect children who would never steal from us, who would never have a creditor. Well, that may be through no fault of their own.
Okay.
But their perfect children might not have a perfect marriage.
Yes.
And what happens when somebody gets divorced?
Right.
The property is split.
Mm-hmm. Or if the person that's related to you dies, dies first or something like that. And so that leaves someone who's not related to you on that account. And
if the person that you made a joint owner
dies. Let's say my daughter marries someone. Okay, if my daughter dies first and both of their names are on my account, then he now has access to my funds, and anybody who's part of his beneficiaries also have access. Is that correct?
If she is deemed to be a legal owner and at her death it's considered part of her estate, it will go to whoever is entitled to get her property.
Yes.
Different legal arrangements can be set up to handle these situations, ownership type situations differently. oftentimes a joint ownership of a bank account is where just the remaining person whose name is on the account will become the owner upon the death of the other.
Okay.
So if it's a mother and daughter dies, it will become mother's property only, and okay. vice versa.
Okay.
That can be set up with homes too.
Okay.
But ownership, I don't want anyone to think that this is a stand-in for good legal advice, because they can be set up many different ways, and somebody needs to actually see the paperwork, advise people how to address a situation if they think there's a possibility of abuse occurring because they've done the joint ownership. We advise people all the time how to protect themselves the best they can in that situation.
Okay. And the one of the things that came up as we were talking is that now you're with Wayne County, and then there's another organization that addresses West Wayne and West and South Wayne County.
That's ours too.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So no, it's the adult age or aging has a different.
Right. The area agencies on aging. There's one set up to cover every region in this country.
Okay.
We happen to have two in Wayne County. There's another area agency on aging that serves all six counties that surround Wayne County. So they're different, configured differently throughout the country. But our Neighborhood Legal Services Elder Law and Advocacy Center handles all of Wayne County with education about mm-hmm. abuse and caregiver issues, mm-hmm. as well as free legal assistance for people 60 and older.
Okay.
We also do education in Livingston and Monroe counties,
all right.
primarily on elder abuse issues.
Okay. All right. Now, you do community presentations, is that correct?
Absolutely.
And if someone wanted to reach you in order to get get one of those presentations, what number would they call? Would it be the same number?
Same number. 313-937-8291.
Okay, and we're going to say that one more time.
313-937-8291. A human being 90% plus of the time
okay.
will answer that phone 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. If mm-hmm. you're calling with an urgent legal matter, please mm-hmm. call immediately
okay.
and speak to whoever answers the phone.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a general matter, please call between 9:30 and 12 noon.
Okay. And those conferences that you were telling me about, again,
the Caregiver Conference at Wayne County Community College Northwest Campus
mm-hmm.
is May 16th.
Mm-hmm.
The International Conference with Canada is mm-hmm. June 26th at Madonna University.
All right.
And if people want more information about that, they can call our office.
Okay. Well, now, I kind of gave you a chance to say the things we had not discovered. So you got about another 5 minutes. Anything else we have not touched on that you would think we would want to share with our listeners?
Boy, I have to remember everything I did say. I just want to remind people that there are resources out there. Please look out for your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
We also like to advise people, if you're looking for alternative living arrangements, mm-hmm. please do so safely.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's looking for an assisted living or a nursing home, there's a lot of resources to help them do
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
They can go to a website called Medicare.gov.
Mm-hmm.
If you are facing the need to find an assisted living or a nursing home for a loved one, do so safely.
Mm-hmm.
Do your research. Don't just go to the place that looks the nicest, that
All
has
right.
the nicest furniture.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Check it out night and day, different times of the day.
Okay, and it always happens that at the end something comes up. When we're talking about assisted living as opposed to nursing home, what's the difference between those two, and what the concerns? When you say that kind of thing.
Generally, assisted living is really a marketing term that refers to just about anything out there where people want to sell mm-hmm. housing, so mm-hmm. to speak, with some assistance available. It mm-hmm. could be minimal assistance, maybe just provides meals on
mm-hmm.
site,
mm-hmm.
or it could be much more hands-on assistance
mm-hmm.
where people need help with activities of daily living, help with medications, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
If it rises to the level where a person needs skilled care,
mm-hmm.
then that legally can only be provided by a skilled nursing care facility.
Okay.
If assisted living attempts to do that without the safeguards in place,
mm-hmm.
where they, at skilled nursing care facilities, they have so many staff per number of residents
mm-hmm.
that legally have to be available to the residents at
right.
certain times. For certain shifts, it changes for
right.
the evening shift or night shift than it would be for the day. A lot of safeguards in place for somebody who needs that skilled care, so they'll get it safely by people who are trained and certified to provide the skilled care, like certified nursing assistants, mm-hmm. how often our RN needs to be available, a doctor needs to be available, all the other services that need to be licensed and regulated by the state of Michigan.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, again, Kate. Is it Catherine? Kate.
Katie.
Okay. I just want to thank you again for, you know, coming on our air, and possibly we'll be able to follow up on some of those conferences that you were telling us about, okay?
Oh, I would love to come back and talk to you about them in more detail, or okay. bring some of our other partners in.
That would be great. Okay.
Thank you, Betty.
Thank you. And this is Betty Daniels from Impact. We just talked to Katie Graham from Neighborhood Legal Services, and we will hope that our listeners will be able to tune in again when we bring her back on some of the other different things that she has shared with us. So thank you for listening to Impact, and we look forward to seeing you the next time, same time, same place.
Hello, this is Terrence of the Play It By Ear Show, every Sunday from 10 a.m. until 1, and I want to say happy birthday to WHFR Radio, Excellence in Broadcasting, Local Independent Music, and I hope we keep on doing it 30 years and 30 years more to come.
Hi there, I'm Lish.
I'm Lance.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Todd.
And we're Penumbrae, and you're listening to WHFR
Dearborn.
This is the TED Radio Hour. Each week, groundbreaking TED Talks.
TED Talks.
TED.
TED.
Technology.
Entertainment. Design.
Design. Is that really what it stands for? I've never known that.
Delivered at TED conferences around the world.
It's the gift of the human imagination.
We've had to believe in impossible things.
The true nature of reality beckons from just beyond.
Those talks, those ideas, adapted for radio. From NPR. I'm Guy Raz. Coming up, is there anything that we could really say is totally original?
The Big Bang.
The genius is really in curating things from the past and reviving them in the present.
The culture of today is really just about taking whatever you feel like and making it your own.
This episode, what's original? After news.
This is Alex from the Left of the Dial radio program, bringing you Indie Rock for 14 of WHFR's 30 years, wishing WHFR a happy 30th birthday.
It's important to plan ahead for emergencies, like the storm. When it kicked in, we had a plan.
Separated.
We were able to get in touch with each other in no time.
I had no idea how to find each other.
My husband kept the kids
tried
occupied.
Calling our son, but there was no reception. Everything was down.
I felt like we handled everything very well.
I had to try and stay calm.
The whole experience was fine.
It was the most frightening 10 hours of my life.
It was kind of like a little family adventure.
Every mother hopes will never happen to her.
I remember the relief of being together.
I realized he was out there all alone.
If there's one piece of advice I'd offer other moms out there, it's to stay calm and keep to the plan.
Some parents plan ahead. Some don't. Make sure you know where to find your family in an emergency. Visit Michigan.gov/beprepared, brought to you by Michigan State.